This is The Huddle.
This is not this. This is what we do.
Every Thursday from noon to 2. The Huddle.
Welcome into The Huddle, everybody. Bob Drossin, Tom, Dave Wyman with you live from Seahawks headquarters. We're a day early. We've got daytime baseball happening tomorrow. So we got The Huddle happening today. Coming up on the show, of course, we'll have our cast of regulars with John Boyle and Steve Rabel joining us. We'll get an opponent preview from Mike Triplett from ESPN.com, giving us a closer look at the New Orleans Saints. And Trey Flowers will join us later on in the program. Looking forward to that conversation. But, Dave, let's get your take. You were out there front and center watching the Seahawks against the Steelers. What was your big takeaway from that game?
Just how they adjusted to the time zone and everything. One of the things that Pete did was had everybody get on the first bus that goes over to the stadium. And that's something, you know, you don't see a lot. Usually, I was a late bus guy, you know.
What is that? You just have multiple choices?
Yeah, there's like two buses. One goes an hour early, and then the other one goes at the, you know, normal time. And, you know, the guys all got on, and that was Pete's idea to get them over there, get out on the field, start working out. I didn't think it was that hot, you know, but still, when you're down there on the field, and they did a good job, you know, keeping the guys cool on the sidelines. And then it just reflected in their play. I mean, look, there was 5:49 left. They were 9 points ahead, and 15 seconds later, they were only ahead by two. And there was a lot of stuff where they reversed momentum. You know, there was sort of a tidal wave of negativity after, you know, a couple of those drives, and they were able to just turn it around and, you know, got an interception, big interception from Bradley McDougal, and, you know, some of those plays that, you know, are kind of the indicator that things are going against you, they kind of turned the tide there. And a lot of it was, you know, just believing in who they are. And the one play that I thought most demonstrated that was the touchdown pass to DK Metcalf. I mean, Russell had the trust of a rookie. It was a 3rd and 3, and Tyler Lockett ran a 5-yard out, and he was open. They've connected on that pass, you know, hundreds of times, and yet he took a shot and threw it perfectly and just believed in his rookie receiver. So, yeah, it was an awesome win. I mean, I don't care about Ben Roethlisberger, and I know these next two games will probably be discounted a bit because you're not going to face Breeze and you didn't face Ben Roethlisberger for a half, but still, getting a win in that time zone against that kind of franchise. They just traded for Minkah Fitzpatrick. They now have 9 first-rounders on their defense. You know, guys like Ben Dupree, you know, and T.J. Watt, T.J. Watt and Stephon Tuitt, I would take those guys on my team. What great football players. And what Tuitt was part of 2.5 sacks, and T.J. Watt had a sack and a bunch of plays. He had that punch out. Such good football players, and yet they were able to withstand that and get a win on the road. It was very impressive.
A lot of people are saying, and many people are saying, I mean, I think it too. I thought Russell Wilson had maybe one of his best regular season games.
Statistically, it was his highest completion percentage single season. It was 83%. And, you know, I did a thing on 710sports.com. I'm not sure if it's up yet, but I did a little thing called Stats Are for Losers. but, you know.
I had a need to see the stats to see that.
Yeah. But the stats on this one was, because I started thinking, he was 83%. You know, if you have 20, 22, 25 passes, because if you go back and look at NFL history, players that have gotten that kind of completion percentage, it's like, you know, high teens, low 20s. To be 83% with 35 attempts, mm-hmm. that's only been done 18 times.
Jeez. Ever?
In NFL history. Yeah, and actually, if you put in another parameter, 3 touchdowns or more in the game and 0 interceptions, there's only 8. And Russell's now one of 8 players to have with that completion percentage, that number of attempts, that number of touchdowns, and 0. And you know what? Whenever you look at Russell's stats, I talked to Clayton about this today, he's in the same category as Breeze, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. And sure enough, Manning had done it once. Breeze has done it twice. Brady's done it twice. So it's just amazing how he's not seen as this Tom Brady type of quarterback when he is. So, I mean, you had to, they had to throw it. And I thought, you know, John thought they took advantage of, you know, they were blitzing a lot. And, you know, and I thought it was a little bit because they had man-to-man matchups and they thought that they could win. So that's what happened. And so they just started throwing the ball, and Russell was 29 of 35. Just an amazing performance by him.
I think Russell's an elite quarterback. I don't think there's any doubt about that, Dave. But the reason why he's not thought of in the Brady category, and really nobody is strictly the championships.
Yeah.
He's 6-3 in the Super Bowl, right? I mean, he's been there 9 times. Russell's been there twice. Russell's only won one of them. Like, nobody else is going to get or even be whispered into that conversation. If Russell wins another Super Bowl and keeps playing like he is now, he'll be right there. As long as if he protects the ball, keeps the ball out of harm's way, like he's been doing so far this year, the last couple of years, I think he'll absolutely be thought of, probably top two at some point.
Well, and that's what he wants. You know, if you ask him how he wants to improve, he's all about winning. But yeah, you look at his wins. But, you know, look, I know we all get it here, and it's there's still people locally that are like, oh, he's short and this and that. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers gets a lot more love nationally than Russell. And, you know, I
think that's fine. Maybe it gives him a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, and he's sometimes compared to like Matthew Stafford, Matt Ryan type of, you know, quarterback, and he's not. So, yeah, I think you're really seeing who Russell is, and, you know, I think everybody thought all that positivity and we want to win games was kind of a put on, and it's really who he's about. I saw him interviewed by Colin Cowherd today, and he's just very humble about it, and all he talks about is winning. So great, great win, and, you know, I thought, yeah, it was his best game.
Let's talk about a couple of the problems they had. The right side of the offensive line really seemed to have a rough day. I mean, Fluker was getting handled before he got hurt, and I couldn't figure that one out. Fetty appears to have taken a step back in the first two games. I thought Yapati looked good. I thought the left side looked fine. What did you see with the offensive line?
Yeah, it was a couple of times, and I always say the offensive line will get beat sometimes mentally, but they got beat physically. I mean, that Stephon Tua guy was a load, man. So, but, you know, the one play that was most puzzling to me was they ran a stunt, and this is the one where T.J. Watt gets a clean hit on Russell early on. And, you know, that's we actually drove through Swickley, Pennsylvania, which is where Chuck Knox is from. He used to have this saying, that's eighth grade Swickley. You know, like you should have been
should have learned that
doing that
in
Pop
high.
Warner. Right, yeah. So, you know, they had the stunt where there's what's called the spike guy. You know, so he spikes outside, and then the guy loops around inside, and that was T.J. Watt. Well, the spike guy, and I can't remember if it was Cameron Jordan or Stephon Tuitt, but he beat Ifedi to the inside. So, you know, then Fluker went to help him, and then it was too late to get to T.J. Watt. So, yeah, and then there was a couple holding penalties, I think, that Ifedi had. So it was rough going there for a while. So I don't know what to say. I mean, look, they're both – I thought Ifedi, after the second game last year, played well. You know, we weren't talking a lot about Jermaine Ifedi. And then, you know, Fluker was pretty much good all year. And, they both struggled.
Well, what I think is interesting about that point is, so you had an off day for the offensive line, especially in the first half, yet you ran for 151 yards, and Russell Wilson had perhaps his best day as a quarterback as a pro.
Yeah.
So does it really matter?
Right. Yeah, you know? It was interesting. During the game, I was complaining a lot about, they were bringing guys off the weak side, the backside, and got a chance to talk to Keith Butler, who's my hero. He's the D coordinator, and he was like a mentor to me. He was a total mentor to me, and he has that southern drawl still.
By the way,
talked to him before the game, and my rookie year, he says, boy, you were drafted here. He called me boy my whole rookie year. You were drafted here to replace me, so you might as well learn the game. And one of the things that we talked about, you know, was you see that receiver coming in motion or a tight end coming in motion to the weak side, that's to cut off the backside rusher. So any slow developing play like a counter play, they have that play where they pull the guard and the backside tackle, and they had a nice big run. But if it's a slow developing play to the weak side and you got a guy coming firing off the backside and you don't account for him, they're going to make plays. And that's what they did. You know, and so Butts just kept bringing that, and sometimes it was from the strong side, and sometimes it was because, like, T.J. Watt beat, you know, Will Disley's block a couple of times. But I thought that was interesting because that's how they were causing a lot of havoc early on, is bringing guys off, you know, off the edges. And really good, like I said, good first-round draft choice type of players. And so, you know, again, I mean, I know they're 0-2, but that defense is really talented. Really talented. So, and one of the guys that's super talented, and the thing that Keith talked about before the game was that Devin Bush kid,
the linebacker, know,
first round draft choice. Yeah, he's like, you can't give those guys too much to do and too much to think about. And he was thinking, because Disley beat him for two touchdowns, one man to man and one sort of in between his zone. And the other thing, Disley on a play went and just dumped him like 10 yards downfield, just got him on roller skates and planted him into the ground. So, yeah, they've got talent and everything. But Disley, I mean, you can't say enough about his performance.
Yeah.
You know, he had a really good game. DK Metcalf, I'm just blown away. Blown away by his maturity. That first catch that he made in the game, I mean, that's a pro, a 10-year veteran catch. And then, you know, the touchdown. So it was really exciting to see. And, you know, they've got some young guys, but, you know, they got guys like Dwayne Brown, KJ Wright, who is quietly having the best year I've seen.
I've never seen a tackle like that, holding somebody's hand.
Yeah, it was like
really?
A handshake.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and then he had another one where they ran a quick out and you know, they thought, oh, he's going to put a move on KJ, and KJ took like 2 4-yard strides and was just all over him. Yeah. So, yeah, got great leadership from their veterans.
Well, it was a good game. It was a win. We'll talk more about it. John Boyle from Seahawks.com will join us as we continue live from Seahawks headquarters. It is The Huddle on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Welcome back into The Huddle, everybody. Bob Gross and Tom, Dave Wyman with you live from Seahawks headquarters. As we do every week, we sit down with our buddy from Seahawks.com, John Boyle.
What's up, gentlemen?
The wardrobe.
Boring pants again.
The wardrobe. What happened?
Well, first of all, I forgot we're doing this on a Wednesday. So even if I had wanted to do something fun for you guys, I was off a day.
Okay.
That's funny because, you know what? I don't have any fun pants. You have fun pants.
Talk to my wife about this.
She does the shopping for you?
Well, not all the shopping, but if I have pants that are an interesting color, it's probably safe to say she bought those.
Hey, well, let's talk about the game that took place in Pittsburgh. Is there one moment, one player, something that stands out to you? I know a lot of people are pointing to DK Metcalf. Obviously, Russell had a career day out there. What stood out
for
you?
Yeah, I mean, you just said it, but Russell, the way he played, and really, like, looking ahead, big picture, what they did in the second half with Russ and the getting the ball out quick, how that just, I mean, you look, the first few drives looked like they weren't going to get anything going because they couldn't protect him. He got sacked three times in the first quarter, once more in the second quarter. They start getting the ball out super quick. And as Pete Carroll said himself, it kind of reminded me of 2015 where they were just, everything was clicking, good rhythm. And when they're doing that, they're going to be really tough to stop.
And the offensive line struggled at first, but they also seemed to get get it
well,
together.
I mean,
especially
helped,
running
yeah,
the ball.
Yeah, that then it certainly helps offensive line when you're getting the ball out quicker. But yeah, they seem to have cleaned some things up. They're still figuring it out a little bit. Mike Capotti missed so much time that, you know, they like him, they want him in there, but it's going to take a minute for them to kind of catch up and get that going.
Why are they struggling? Because he is the only change. I mean, the guys that were struggling this game are the two guys that were there last year, and Fluker and Nifedi.
Yeah, I mean, that surprised me how much they've, you know, with some of the protection issues the first couple games, and the penalties are, I mean, that's the easy one. They got to clean up. You can't, you know, if you get beat a couple times in a game and a guy gets a sack, you know, that's football, that happens. But they got to cut those penalties back. That's hurting them too many times.
Wasn't that Russ's best game?
Yeah, I mean, it's right up there. It's hard to say. There's been so many. But, you know, again, going back to 2015, there's about 4 or 5 of them that you could make the argument for. I always go back to that game against Houston where he and Deshaun Watson were just kind of trading blows. But, that's certainly up there, and especially in the context of going on the road and the way things started with him getting beat up a little bit. It was a great performance.
I was happy by Rashad Penny about him, too. You know what's funny about him? He doesn't look like he's running as fast as he is.
Yeah, he's kind of got that glide to him.
It's very deceiving.
Yeah.
But the move that he had on the touchdown where he dipped all the way inside, and it's almost like he hopped backwards to get around that linebacker.
That little jump cut to the side there.
But yeah, that's the thing that stands out, and I don't know it's hard to explain because he's covering lots of ground, and you know, you see he's running away from defenders, but he's such a big dude. I think I told him I want him to run more guys over downfield, and then I said, don't listen to me.
Yeah, well, he doesn't need to run guys over when he's got Russell Wilson blocking dudes down the field.
Yeah, that's right.
That was actually my question. Does Pete mind that, or does he just sort of chuckle at it? Like, what happens sometimes.
They always kind of laugh about it. I think as long as you watch those plays, he's not trying to blow guys up. He's just kind of getting
He just sort of got in the way.
He gets in the way. And they're okay with it. Now, if it comes down to the problem with that is even if he's not trying to initiate contact, by becoming a blocker, he does leave himself a little vulnerable to getting hit. So, yeah, if he gets knocked off his feet a couple times doing that, they might have a talk with him. But so far, he's been pretty smart about how he does it.
Does Pete have a doghouse at all for a guy? Because we know the one thing that he doesn't want are turnovers, right? And Chris Carson, look, he's a focal point of this offense. But might he get a talking to?
Oh, for sure he'll get a talking to. I mean, that's no question about that. In terms of is there a doghouse, we did see him go right to Penny on the next series, and I don't know if that was just the way the rotation was going to go anyway, or if that was, hey, let's take a break, cool off, like make sure you're okay.
He gave him the ball on the fourth
and
one.
But that I was going to say, that's a big deal, because if they had finished a game with Penny, and now you go into this week, we're talking about the fumbles, and did they lose confidence in him? To go to him with the game on the line, and that's true. Because if they don't get that, we're talking, 20 yards to field goal range. Right. So that was a massive play. So to put your trust back in him, I think, is really big for Chris Carson going forward to say, look, you got to fix this, but we trust you.
I don't know. It's only been two games so far, but DK Metcalf has been a pleasant surprise. I think there's a lot of anticipation of what he could be.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people expected him to be a presence or have an impact already.
I mean, I'll be honest. I kind of was worried that the hype was getting to the point where there was going to be some inevitable letdown, because that position's really hard for a rookie to come in and be like play really well right away. And all the time he missed. I mean, he missed three preseason games, a good chunk of training camp because of that knee. So, you know, he's not the complete package yet. He's still learning. He's got to clean up some penalties. It's funny, Pete Carroll's asked about offensive line penalties, and he just volunteered. And DK had two. So clearly they're on that issue for DK. But to come out and make that big an impact his first two games is really encouraging for the offense.
And speaking of making a big impact, Will Dissly, expected him to be a little slowed coming off that surgery, but he looks like the player he was the first week last year.
Exactly. And I think, he went out so early last year that you almost kind of forget, not forget about him, but you forget what an element of the offense he could be. And it's almost like adding a new really good tight end this season because of how much he missed. And, yeah, it's funny. You know, this guy was a defensive lineman in college. They talk about him as this great blocker when they draft him, and he's looking like a real weapon in the passing game.
Yeah, he is. They made a big deal out of Metcalf with his rookie debut, 89 yards or whatever it was. But that was just for a receiver.
Because Dissly was over 100.
Dissly had 105 in Denver last year. So, yeah, he kind of, I don't know, it's kind of his personality, too. I talked to him after, and I go, man, I talked a lot about you during the broadcast. And he goes, yeah, you know, that's the part I don't really care for that much.
he doesn't want you talking about him?
Well, he was kind of joking, but, you know, he's just a very humble guy. I heard what he said. I thought Lano Hill played pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
He had a rush that was phenomenal where the guy caught him, and he stayed on his feet and kept coming, and it was on a blitz, but what do you hear from Pete about Lano's performance?
Yeah, I got the impression from his when he was asked about him. He seemed like he was kind of trying to temper the answer, because my thinking is they want to wait and see till everybody's healthy and make a decision on what they're doing at that position, and you don't want to, overpraise one guy and make it look like, because people are always going to read into what he says. So, but overall, he did play really well, and Pete basically said he played well except the one play, which is the flea flicker where he bit on that, which a lot of guys do, and it cost him a lot of yards.
Yeah, somebody asked me about that play, and that's one of those with the DBs where if you're the front seven, you're like, we'll take care of the run.
Yeah,
okay, we'll take care. We don't need you up there. But he caught up.
He did catch up. I mean, that was a nice catch. He got in there and still was able to play decent defense on it. It was a good grab.
Also, I think it stinks that you don't get an interception. That was just a failed try.
Oh, and the two-point conversion.
But he picked off a pass, and I don't think that you
that doesn't
get that
count.
Stat.
No, I don't think
it doesn't go in the stats. No,
oh, that's weak.
Yeah,
I agree.
It's just a pass failed is all they call that.
Yeah.
that's good. So if you were to intercept that, take it back, do you get credited with 2 points?
you do get 2 points for scoring, but you don't, you know.
But not an interception?
Yeah, you're not getting credit.
How did you get the ball? That's very strange. Yeah,
totally
magic.
Ridiculous. That's the point, magic.
Speaking of the secondary, Shaquille Griffin, I thought he had a good week one. And on Sunday, I think he got beat twice by McDonald on the touchdowns, maybe at least once, maybe twice. But other than that, I thought he had a pretty darn good game.
Yeah, I mean, he's off to a good start. And, again, I think we talked about this last week, but he was a guy who was really hard on himself after the season. And he came back pretty dedicated, in better shape. And, yeah, it's, you know, I don't remember exactly those touchdowns, how that played out. But I feel like they're really happy with the way he's playing these first couple games.
John, always good to talk to you.
Of course.
Look forward to seeing you this weekend, and then we'll talk again next week, and we'll evaluate
the
wardrobe.
I'll see what I can do. Yeah, the Wednesday's got me off my game.
Okay.
You should start a Twitter handle, John Boyle's Pants.
John Boyle's Wardrobe.
Fun Pants.
Pass. I'll pass on that.
Yeah, he doesn't seem excited about that.
No.
Right. Thanks, John. We appreciate it, man.
Of course.
There you go. There's John Boyle from Seahawks.com. He's with us every week. Still to come, we've got Trey Flowers, Steve Rabel. We'll do an opponent preview with Mike Triplett from ESPN.com. But coming up, it's going to be a different look for this New Orleans Saints team. I want to get Dave Wyman's thoughts on what the Seahawks are facing. We'll talk about that next as we continue live from Seahawks headquarters. It is The Huddle on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
It is The Huddle here, live from Seahawks headquarters. Turn you over to Pete Carroll here shortly. He'll be stepping up to the podium. Before we do that, though, Dave, I want to get a quick thought from you on facing this New Orleans Saints team without Drew Brees. Is this, I think most people are chalking it up as a win now. It's a gimme. Bridgewater's a guy that's got some ability. I understand he got thrown into the fire last week, but he started in this league. He looked actually pretty good before he suffered the severe injury in Minnesota. What do you see in him?
I like him. Was it 16 when the Seahawks went out there and played them and just smoked the Vikings?
The last time they played against Bridgewater was the playoff game, the cold one.
Yeah, but
Blair Walsh game.
Prior to that, either the year before. Anyway,
I think it might have been that same year, actually.
Same year, yeah. They went out and beat him pretty good. And I remember looking at Bridgewater going, you know, the guy, for a young guy, I really liked him. And, you know, then he had that weird injury, which is so strange.
Terrible one,
But this Taysom Hill guy, I think, is going to be really fun to watch, too. I mean, he's a guy, you look at his stats, like he has tackles because he covers kickoffs. He has return yardage. He throws it. He catches it.
And Peyton basically said today he's playing.
He runs it. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. It seemed like he would, in a 60-play game, he would get, you know, 10, 12.
Right.
I feel like you're going to see more like 30, 40 from him.
And the Saints are good.
Yeah.
I mean, they got other players.
Thomas is arguably the best wideout in the league and, you know, in a pretty good defense. Cam Jordan on the defensive side. Am I getting that right, or is it Jordan Cameron? I know there's a Cameron Jordan and Jordan Cameron.
Sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, they'll stand him up every once in a while. They run what looks like a 4-3, but they'll stand him up and rush him off the edge. And their defense, you know, they did a decent job against, for a while, some of the series I was looking at in the Ram game, you know, defending that offense that the Rams run. But, you know, we'll see how much Drew Brees means to that offense. I think it's quite a lot.
I think it's a lot.
I think it would be like, you know, if Russ, although, you know, Seahawks have a better running game, you know, than they do. But, you know, I think it's probably, yeah. What are you going to do if it's Geno Smith instead of Russell Wilson?
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll talk more about that. Pete Carroll will be stepping up to the podium here momentarily. We're going to send you out there. We'll catch up with Trey Flowers, Steve Rabel, and Mike Triplett to give us a closer look at the Saints. All of that coming up as we continue live from Seahawks headquarters on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Welcome back into The Huddle, everybody. Live from Seahawks headquarters, waiting for Pete Carroll to step up to the podium. As soon as he does, we'll send you out there. Trey Flowers will be joining us on the program. Again, Steve Rabel. And then we'll get a closer look at the Saints team with Mike Triplett as well from ESPN.com. So as we wait for Pete Carroll, all right, well, let's send it out there right now and let you hear what the coach has to say.
Speed and toughness and all that in scheme. So it's a game that calls for us to play really solid across the board. Everybody's got to show up. Everybody's got to do well because these guys can get you a lot of ways. So I have a lot of respect for this opponent. And it's great for us. We need to play good ball across the board too. And see if we can put together a good game. So it should be an exciting one.
Coach, expecting Teddy Bridgewater or Taysom Hill, how do you kind of prepare for that?
I would think that Teddy is goes, you know, and just by the structure that they've been in. But you know, Taysom Hill is a nice football player, you know, and we haven't seen him play quarterback that much, but I know he's on the roster like that, can do that. So just have a lot of respect for him. They've got one of the most exciting players in the NFL in Alvin Kamara. He's an incredible football player, and they use him. Sean knows how to do all of the tricks and figure out all the spots to put him in to make him a really dangerous weapon. And, you know, Michael Thomas caught 125 last year. He's already got 20 catches, you know. I mean, they have all kinds of stuff. So it's a very difficult challenge for us.
You mentioned the sacks. Cameron Jordan, how big a problem is he?
Yeah, he's a monster. And Hendricks is off to a great start, too. You know, Davenport, that's why they got numbers already, and they've had numbers for a couple of years. So I'm telling you, you ask anybody that you bring up, they can do stuff.
Said, how concerned are you at all, or if at all, about the protection issues so far with the offense?
Yeah, we're concerned. Yeah, I like what we did in the second half last week. We really caught up with the rhythm and the style, and Russ was phenomenal. But he worked together with his guys up front in really good fashion. You know, there's numbers of reasons why, but it was great having Mike back in the lineup and giving us that stability. We got a good play out of George as well. So, you know, Mike hasn't played in a month. So Jordan missed 3 weeks or something, too. So those little issues can be concerns, and maybe we can get better. We're kind of counting on it as we stay together and keep making progress.
How's DJ doing?
He went through the walkthrough, and he's going to try to get some work today. He's giving me a thumbs up like he's ready to go. We'll have to wait and see how the week goes.
How many times have you had to prepare with the idea that two quarterbacks could play in a game against the ability of two different guys essentially?
I don't know. I don't have a number for you. I can't tell you. But I know you really don't care about the number. It comes up, you know, and some once in a while. And it's just depends on how different the styles are of the players, you know, if it makes a difference or not, and how you prepare. And really, we have not seen enough of Hill to know, you know, how they would play him in this kind of situation. He's been spotted in and out and done a lot of really cool things. But he's a great college football player, and we know all that.
I know he hasn't played a ton, but how is Teddy maybe similar to what you saw back in 2015?
Yeah, he's really, really solid. I mean, he manages the game beautifully. He's experienced. He's poised. Good decision maker. I'm sure, you know, in Sean's package of stuff and all the beautiful things they do on offense, you know, they got a ton of stuff that they'll do with him. They won't hold back, I don't think. You know, there's, you know, you're comparing him to Drew Brees, who's one of the all-time players ever. So it might be different in some ways, but in one game, 1 week, you know, we got to be ready for everything, because Teddy can do everything. He can throw the ball down the field. He can move. He can throw the ball in the quick rhythm stuff. He has all of the ability to do that. We've fortunately seen him enough and played against him, and we have a feeling for him, but I don't know what Sean's going to do, and rarely does anybody know what he's going to do when it comes game time.
Will Disley looks all the way back from the injury. Is he all the way back?
Yeah, he's back, but he continues to rehab, though. I mean, he's in there every day. We go through the weight room before practice every day. He's getting his work, still working on stuff, but he looked like he was in, you know, full form last week.
Coach, you have touched on it Monday, but the confidence your younger players get from winning two close games, and how long does it really take those younger guys to get it in terms of?
Yeah, it has been important for us. Both, you know, one at home, one on the road, all the way across the country, Steelers, the whole thing. You know, that was all really important for us. Needed to get through that and then come back out of it and be able to, you know, look back and reflect. And I can't tell you how many weeks it takes, but it does take some time. And then once it hits, it usually is kind of clear. It's kind of obvious. We're not there yet. We still got a lot of work to do and all. But there's a lot of young guys playing around the league. We got a lot of young guys playing on our team, and we're counting on those guys continuing to get through it. The work that they get in special teams is really important. We have been pretty consistent on teams first couple weeks out, and that's a good sign that the guys are settling in and feeling comfortable and not going overboard. Remember, I did throw at you about the 5 penalties, whatever it was, the first week on Rooks. You know, we came back and did a little better, so it's a process, and it's really kind of the magnitude of the experiences, the kind of games. You know, we've had two really close games, which is really good for us to hang in there and focus and, you know, stay with it and finish the games. So we're building, and they're valuable experiences.
Pete, going back to the Pittsburgh game, Bud Dupree said he apologized to Russell for the helmet-to-helmet hit.
I hope that helps him. That's a heck of a hit. I don't blame anybody on any of that kind of stuff, but that's a nice gesture by him.
Have you heard anything from the league on that at all?
Yes. Yeah, it was illegal. It was an illegal hit.
You mentioned Sean a couple times. These coaches.
No, I didn't say that right. That's how they assessed it. They didn't. It wasn't an illegal hit on the field. They didn't call it, so it wasn't. But they assessed it that they would, if they did it again, they would have thought they should have called it.
You mentioned Sean a couple times. You've coached against him a bunch. How much do you enjoy kind of matching wits with
him? No, I like it. No, I mean, after a few years coaching, you know, you look forward to these kinds of matchups, and it's one that we've been looking towards through the off season, you know, and so. I have great respect for what he's done. He's a fantastic coach, and I like that he's sculpted and then re-sculpted his team a couple times over the years, and you can see the difference. And I like the balance that he has in his team now in the last two or three years as much as any time that I've seen him in the past. And they're really tough on defense, and their teams are really there, and they play really hard, you know, across the board. It's tough to deal with. It's a good experience. A challenge for us.
Coach, now that you got the first game out of the way, do you hope to see a jump out of LJ Collier in week two?
We'll see. Yeah, I would hope so. You know, always for everybody. He did all right first time out. It was good. It was about as much as we would hope to play him. We'll get him, you know, more as the early part of the season goes on, and he's going to have a real upside. Now, he's just got to get going. He's so far behind, you know, so we're patient with that.
How much do you think he can benefit LJ playing with Hansa and Tommy?
Well, I think playing with, I'm hoping that playing with those two guys on the field will benefit for everybody, and we're kind of counting on that. But, you know, those guys should be able to give us a real nice presence outside, and that always helps the collective rush and when you're pressuring and everything. So we're just getting started there, too. You know, I can't tell you what it's going to be like or what we can do here and there. We have to figure it out as we go a little bit, and it'd be great to get Zig out there. He's really chomping at the bit finally to get out in the field, and so we'll see how it goes.
How did LJ kind of handle the first game physically? Working
through
it?
Yeah, he came through fine. No questions, no issues.
Are you hoping to get David Moore back this week?
Or? Yes. Yeah, there's a really good chance that David, he's got to go day-to-day here, but he's practicing to play. So that's a real boost for us.
How is Tedrick doing with the hamstring issue?
It's still touch and go to make it back for this week, but he's working really hard. He's really determined. And if not this week, it'll be next week. He's right around the corner from it. If not, you know, we'll see what happens by the end of the week.
It's good to see that Tyler Lockett can carry the quick passing game and be a go-to guy underneath in addition to what he does downfield.
Yeah, but there's never been any question in our minds about that. That just hasn't been what's featured. But Tyler can do everything. He can run every route, and he has great feel and sense on everything. So that's just, you know, he'll do whatever he's asked of. And it was really it fit the game plan really well, and both – Russ and Shoddy and Tyler worked together really well to make it come to life.
Everyone knows the ball's going to Michael Thomas. I guess what makes him such a good
receiver? He's just a fantastic player. He's got all the instincts, all the awareness, all the catches, great range. They just totally trust the guy, you know, and they just absolutely believe in him because he's the real deal. He's a great player.
What do you think of the work that Russell does with his mental conditioning coach?
What do I think of it?
Yeah.
I think everything that you can compete to work at is of value, you know, if you can fit it into your schedule and all. Russ is a tireless worker and competitor, and he's like the great competitors. You know, they're always curious to find another way to figure out how to get a little bit better, and that curiosity reigns in him. And this is one area that he's really worked to emphasize, and it's a good illustration of just taking advantage of all of the elements that are there to help you, you know, and he's enjoying it. I know he likes getting into it. He loves anything he can do to work to get better. He enjoys, and he's enjoying that.
Jazz Ferguson getting let go over the kind of challenges that he faced.
Jazz had a good run with us. Now he did well. I hope we can get him back sometime. He is a good playmaker now. There's no question that he can make some stuff happen. He's in a position group that's really doing well. And we drafted three guys at the spot too. You know, it's just a hard spot to make the club. So,
any new injuries out of the game?
That you don't know about?
Ethan Posick's going to miss a little bit of time here during the week. We think he's going to play, but he's got a stiff neck. We'll see how he does.
How's
Pruden Ford? Pruden's going to practice. We'll see how he does, and he'll be on a little bit of pitch count during the week, and we'll see how he does and handles it, and we'll look forward to him playing. He's playing. If you talk to him, he thinks he's playing. So his attitude is perfect to get back. We'll see if we can get that done.
As a former player and coach at the college level in California, what's your take on potentially that rule changing?
You know, I don't know the real depth to it. I've never been the guy that feels like the players needed to be paid, you know, to play, and you know that they. I felt like their scholarship and all the advantages that the guys got was always a pretty darn good deal. To me, that sounds like it's an adult situation that have entered into the, you know, trying to make sense of a kid's experience, and so they justified it. I don't know that it's wrong. I mean, it's, you know, good for the kids and all, and if it's the right thing, maybe the rest of the country adopts it. But I never thought that it was necessary. You know, I mean, even though there's times that are tough for kids that don't have, you know, a lot of money to take as incidental spending and stuff like that, when the kid's on scholarship, he's taken care of pretty well. You know, they can make it, you know. So to start that, I'm surprised it happened, but we'll see what happens. I know nothing.
Over the years, have you adjusted at all the way you attempt to connect with your younger players, kind of stuff like social media coming to the game, or just anything like that?
Man, I'm kind of a dog on Twitter, so I've been there for a long time. I don't even know if that counts as social media anymore. That's kind of like so old. But you know, I haven't really tried to change or anything. I haven't done that. I think it's probably surprising to people that are watching, well, how could this guy, you know, get along with those guys? But I've never had any problem. You know, I haven't had any issue. And I think if there's a key to it, I understand better how it works relationship-wise. You know, I mean, we're a relationship-based organization. That's the heart of how we operate. And that means that to do that, the way I understand how we do it is you have to give to the relationship, and you got to pay attention, and you got to listen, and you got to be available when the times are necessary to develop a relationship and build an understanding. And I don't think it matters how old you are or how young you are. You know, I mean, I'm doing it with my grandkids, you know, so I don't, it doesn't matter to me in the same fashion. And I do that by caring so much that I'll do whatever I need to do to make sense to them and help them out and whatever. So maybe that's the connective, you know, element that gives us a chance. But I won't know that it's an issue until they tell me it is, you know, so I don't know.
During the season, do you meet with guys and talk to them about non-football stuff?
Kind of a regular ongoing process, yeah. It's just whatever's happening, you know, family issues, stuff that comes up, things back home, their college experience, what's going on, games, you know, where they live. I mean, there's always, you know, I need to always be on that topic because I care. And it matters to me what's going on with these guys. It's hard to get really intimate relationships, and that's not necessarily the goal. It's just, there needs to be a relationship with foundation and communication, and interaction, and most of all, listening, I think, is probably the most powerful part of the whole thing.
It's important. You're saying it's important for you to connect to the players. It seems like it's also important for you to connect to the Bill Russells and those things and kind of what you get from there to help with the kids and what's happening today.
You're either competing or you're not. I mean, you're either competing or you're not. And I know that may sound kind of simple to you, but to me, every communication, every opportunity to meet and greet, learn from, understand, research. I got people bringing me stuff all the time. This, hey, you might be interested in this, you may be interested in that. And it doesn't take me long. If I see something that I really like, I'm calling the people because I need to know what's going on. But that, to me, that's just being a competitor, you know. That's just going for it. I mean, the fact that Bill lives right across the lake here, you know, I mean, what an unbelievable gift. And he's awarded us that he would share some time with us. And just knowing him that he's here, that makes me more ready to pick up one of his books. I mean, you guys should read Russell Rules. It's one of his 8 or 9 year old book or something. But you should read it if you want to know what we're doing and how we think. I mean, he's taught me a ton. Many times, but he did it all over again this year, you know. So where is the next
inspiration coming from? Well, if I'm not open to it, then I'm not listening, I'm not watching, and then I'm not competing. So that's how that happens. So that's why it happens. And I don't care where I got to go to figure stuff out or whatever to get challenged and learn. And Bill just happens to be right across the lake. So.
How much does the mechanism of your profession in the NFL and the business and having to make cold decisions go completely at odds with what you're trying to do, like you just said, be intimate, make relationships?
Well, that's a good question, Craig. Good for you, man. It becomes all the same in all areas to me. I mean, the decision-making process, the analysis, the observation, and the making sense of that, the observation, and then acting on it, and all that. It's to me, it's all the same. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about family, or we're talking about kids, or we're talking about business, or talking about your house, or whatever, real estate, whatever you're dealing with. Because you got to listen really carefully. You got to take in all the information, and then you deal with the subjects. If it's a guy has to be released, and there's a tough decision, there's a guy has to be IR'd, and you have to figure out whether you can keep him around or you can't. I mean, all those choices, they're all human issues that deserve every bit of every ounce of focus I can give to it and care. Whether it hurts me or makes my feelings, I feel bad about having to go through it, I don't even worry about that. It's hurting their feelings too, and we try to go through it together. If you think about, and this is worth talking about, if you think about all the stuff we've been through over the years and all of the different instances of things that have occurred and people saying this or doing that, and they get in trouble or they don't get in trouble or they're exposed in some way, and people don't understand them, and all that relationship stuff that is available, I'm digging in right to the middle of it and trying to go right to the person and what's up with that person, all that I know about them, all that they need to know at the time that I can help them with, and we just make it through it. That's why you asked me, how are you going to deal with it? Well, the same way we always do. Care so much that you go for it with the individual. Whether we're letting somebody go, I try to see every guy before he gets out of here. Sometimes I miss him when there's a lot of numbers and stuff, but I'm trying to see every person on the way out, because those decisions are... that's the most important thing in that kid's life in that day, in that moment. And he'll remember it. I remember exactly what happened when I got cut for the last time. I remember every word of it. And I don't want to misrepresent that situation or any of the other tough ones that come up. The last part of it is if you trust the people that you work with, like John and I figuring this stuff out. I impeccably trust him. And so when we figure stuff out and we go back and forth, and if we don't agree on it, we keep working until we do. And we will, and we know that. And so both of us have to give and take, and it's no different with, I think in any relationship, you got to work your way through it because you care so much, you'll take the time and you'll spend the time. And in the end of it, it feels good when you do it that way, even when it hurts, so thanks for asking.
So you impeccably trust Shire.
Uh-oh. Is there a reason why I shouldn't? Because I can back off on that in a heartbeat if I have to now.
How many people have you had in your life like that, where you have that level of trust?
A lot of people. Yeah. A lot of people. To me, I think it's not hard to trust somebody when you know them. And you may not agree. They may be on totally different wavelengths. But it's about being open to and receiving with who they are, where they're coming from at the time you're dealing with them, And I've had a lot of people that I've dealt with over the years that other people don't see. Why would you ever be friends there? Why do you have a relationship with that person? It just doesn't seem to fit. I don't see it that way, So, but my friends see it that way, and they've challenged me on numbers of occasions. So,
Coach, what did
this is going into?
What went into signing Adrian? I'm blanking on his last name.
Colbert.
We've had our eye on him for a couple of years, and this was a great job by John and Nolan and the guys that kept track of him to get him in a program. I mean, we really think he's got great potential. He's really fast. He's really tough. He finished his career in Miami, transferring in, and we just picked him up a long time ago. And he's one of those guys to me that demonstrates the kind of energy that we really like when he plays. He loves to run and hit now. And so he's really fast. He ran 4.3s, and 211 pounds yesterday. Big kid, strong kid, and he's got a spirit about him too. So he kind of fired me up. Healthy enough. He's going to practice a little bit today, and we're going to work him into it and see how healthy he is. We worked him out yesterday, and then we need to find out.
In addition to the relationship with John, has it been important for you to have one with Matt Thomas as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. And to the depths of relationship. I mean, to all kinds of stuff, from as personal as you can get to business-like as you can get, you know. But, again, I go back to it's the willingness to give your best quality to the relationship that gives you the most in return, you know. And so we've got to make tough decisions, and there's hard stuff, and we've philosophically battled at times and stuff, but our guys in this organization, personnel and the coaches, we're connected. There's a lot of organizations where they're on different floors, and I don't believe in that. I don't think that's what gets you the chance to have the best interaction and the most information, you know, and all that, and best process. So we don't do it that way here. So Matt's right in the middle of everything. Yeah.
There you go. There's Pete Carroll speaking with the media. We're going to come back, catch up with Trey Flowers as we continue live from Seahawks headquarters. It is The Huddle on 710 ESPN Seattle.